Welcome to Counter Apologetics.
Welcome to Counter Apologetics. I'm your host, Emerson Green. And today we'll be discussing the problem of holiness.
Holy is the Lord God Almighty. The whole earth is filled with His goodness. He is holy. He is high. He is set apart. So we sing to Him.
Do we judge God by the same moral standards that we judge humans? In an email exchange I recently had with a Christian, he stated, quote, "We do not hold God accountable or judge him the same way we hold accountable or judge humans, because he is not a human. He is very different from a human. Therefore, we must evaluate God by a very different set of standards than we evaluate humans," end quote. At this point, most people ask why God is held to a different set of standards, but I was hoping to get an answer to a different question. Rather than why God is held to a different set of standards, I'm dying to know what those standards are. And as a follow-up, how did you come by that information? I think it's biblically uncontroversial to say that God often breaks the rules that we're expected to follow, and more on that in a minute. The point is that this wouldn't pose any problem for my Christian correspondent, given his opinion that God is held to a different set of standards than humans are, since he's not a human. So, let me try to describe this idea charitably. God gave commandments for us humans to follow that would benefit us and our societies, but he has his own set of rules that may or may not always be synonymous with the rules that he gave us, since he doesn't have a human nature living in a society full of other humans. Sure, why not? I mean, I believe this has troubling implications for the Christian version of objective morality, but putting that objection to the side for the moment, I'm really curious to know what these standards are that God has to live up to.
I am to speak tonight on the holiness of God, and I want to read Isaiah 6:3. One cried unto another and said, "Holy, holy, holy is the Lord of hosts. The whole earth is full of His glory."
Let's back up and go through this problem a little more carefully. What does God require of us to be morally good? The Bible is more or less clear. Thou shalt not kill, thou shalt not steal, thou shalt not bear false witness, love your enemies, pray for those who persecute you, turn the other cheek. The standard is there, and we all fall short. But what makes God morally good? Why does He deserve to be called holy? I ask because not only do we fall short, but God falls short of these moral standards that He sets for us to follow. He commits global genocide with the flood. In Joshua, He commands the slaughter of everything that has the breath of life, men, women, children, infants, livestock. In 2 Samuel, God massacres 70,000 Israelites because David didn't follow His instructions while taking a census. In 2 Chronicles 18:22, God puts lies in the mouths of the prophets. In 2 Thessalonians 2:11, He sends a spirit of delusion so that people will believe in what is false and not be saved. In 1 Samuel 6:2, He instructs prophets to lie. So God does not live up to the standards that He supposedly wants us to follow. As Jeremy Behan puts it,
"If such actions are permissible for a supremely good, morally perfect being, it's hard to imagine what action, if any, would be morally off limits. So God's holiness is clearly not measured by the standard He has given to us. He is following some other standard altogether."
This means that God's goodness is not different in degree from the standards of human goodness that He has given to us, but must be different in kind. It's not that He's better than us because He follows some rules of morality to a perfect degree. He's following a different standard altogether.
"But nowhere are we told what is required for God to be holy, or what for God would constitute an unrighteous act. God's holiness is unknowable because it's different in kind from human righteousness, not merely different in degree. To prove me wrong on this point should be easy. All you need to do is identify an action that is not morally permitted for God to do. Just one would suffice. Our understanding of God's righteousness would be rather pitiful, but at least we could say God's holiness had a shred of meaning. But I've never met an apologist yet who could give me one example."
God appears to be held to an occasionally overlapping but ultimately unique set of standards than the ones to which humans are held. I want to know what these standards are, and the answer to this question will help me get a meaningful answer. If you can name one action that God can't perform because it would corrupt his holiness, if God did X, he would no longer be holy. This is even harder than it may already be because of God's willingness to lie. You may want to go to the Bible to look for something God can't do, but because God is apparently very comfortable with deceiving people, as he did in 2 Chronicles 18:22, 2 Thessalonians 2:11, and 1 Samuel 16:2, we can't really trust anything that God says about himself anyway. This makes the problem not only intractable, but unsolvable in principle. If God's goodness cannot be defined meaningfully, and a corrupting action cannot be named, we must simply define God's goodness in a completely circular fashion. Whatever God does, by definition, is good. This doesn't make God moral, this makes God amoral, and nothing more. God's authority on morality comes from force, or the threat of force. Might makes right. And keep in mind, God was here first, before we got here. He made us later, which means that he purposefully made us weak, to the point that he could establish his authority and dominance with force. So not only is God's goodness based on force and force alone, but he must have planned it that way. Meanwhile, we're praising God for how good he is. We'll be right back.
Keep the discussion going and visit emersongreenblog.wordpress.com to get even more counter-apologetics, as well as political content. Like the show on Facebook and add Emerson as your friend to keep up and connect. Want to finance Emerson's thinly veiled hatred of God? You can support the show on a per-episode basis at patreon.com/counter. All patrons get early access to every episode, as well as thanks by name at the end of the next release. Higher-level patrons get a chosen comment or question shared on air and get to choose the topic of a future episode. Also, somewhere in the multiverse, Emerson will buy you a private jet. I can't guarantee which universe it will be in, but I can guarantee that it will happen in one of them.
Whatever God does, by definition, is good. But this reduces the good to the arbitrary whims of a divine dictator, without any standard to live by, who can only be called an amoral being. Absolute morality has no ground except in God's infinite subjectivity, and we are left with moral relativism on a cosmic scale. As such, the only moral authority God would have over us could not come from reason, respect, or example, but only from the threat of force. Neither conclusion is satisfactory. If God's holiness is unintelligible or relative, then the foundation for Christian morality is also unintelligible or relative. It's not rational to believe in such a God.
I want to give credit to Jeremy Behan of the Reasonable Doubts podcast for creating this argument. I almost exclusively used his work as a source for this episode. If you've never listened to Reasonable Doubts before, do yourself a favor and check it out. I consider it to be the gold standard of counter-apologetics podcasts. I'd also like to welcome all the listeners of The Scathing Atheist who came over after last week. I owe a huge thank you to No Illusions for an incredibly generous shout-out at the end of episode 239 of The Scathing Atheist. I'm sure everyone listening to this is already familiar, but the Scathing Atheist crew also makes God-awful movies, The Skeptocrat, and Citation Needed. Oh, and Eli has a blog. But if Reasonable Doubts is the gold standard of counter-apologetics podcasts, then their podcasts are the gold standard of atheist comedy shows. Please check out their work, and please support it. Those are all the counter-apologetics I have for you today. You can support the show on a per-episode basis at patreon.com/counter, where you can earn early access to every episode in addition to many other benefits. If you don't have the money to support on Patreon, but you still want to pretend to be an atheist because you hate God, you can like us on Facebook and Twitter, or leave a 5-star review on iTunes or wherever you found this podcast. Feel free to reach out with questions, comments, or topic suggestions using the contact info you can find in the show notes. If you think I've made an error or excluded an important argument for or against the apologetics discussed in this episode, you can voice your opinion publicly on our Facebook page or message me privately. Our theme music was written and performed by the band Wailers. The song is called Magic Tricks and was used with permission. Thank you for joining me today. I've been Emerson Green, and I'll see you next time we meet to counter apologetics.